This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, for the first hour, we're not going to have any guests. It's going to be open lines, and we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And for those of you in the Santa Cruz and Monterey Bay area who have been listening to our programs regularly, and then we've been off a week because our transmitter went down, and fortunately we were able to get it, have to buy a new one and back up running. And anybody of you who would like to help us, why, Santa Cruz Educational Broadcasting Foundation, not the Radio Liberty, but Santa Cruz Educational Broadcasting Foundation, or KFBR, is tax deductible, and if our address is Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's 13, Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. And fortunately, we're back up running, and a voice of sanity and a community gone mad. Under any circumstances, this evening we welcome your calls. I thought I'd start out by reading something that Gary Bauer wrote. Now, Gary Bauer is a spokesman for the New American Century, the program for the New American Century. And, of course, you can go to their website, newamericancentury.com, this is where the Project of the New American Century website is. And if you read the 1997 announcement of the Statement of Principles of the Project for the New American Century, of the original 27 members of this very exclusive elite organization, Gary Bauer is one of those members. So 10 years ago, he joined the group. He certainly has consistently supported their policies of war in the Middle East. And his job, at least in my estimation, is to keep the conservative Christians, evangelical Christians aligned. Mr. William Bennett is there to keep the conservative Catholics in line. Norman Poderotz is there to keep the Jewish people in line with this neoconservative agenda, which is, of course, to drag America into war after war after war. But I get a daily fax from Mr. Gary Bauer, and this is the one that I got today. It was talking about a new poll of the attitudes and beliefs of American Muslims. And he says, well, the American Muslims' beliefs are really very disturbing. And, of course, you must understand that everything is being done to get the American people to hate Muslims. I mean, how can you have a war if you don't hate somebody? I mean, during the First World War, well, we had to hate the Germans, and so we called them Huns, and we told stories about how they cut the breasts off of women and raped and ravaged them, and how they cut the hands off of little Belgian boys, and they had a big poster showing the bloody Huns cutting the hands off of those little Belgian boys, and there wasn't any truth to any of the stories. But if you get people to hate one another, you can get a war going. How do you get rational people to want to kill one another? But these are the techniques. During the Second World War, the Japanese became Japs. The Germans all were Nazis. And, of course, now our enemy is the Islamofascist. They've created a new word, the Islamofascist. It's coordinated. You can see how all the media uses that word and in preparation for the coming war with Iran and the entire Muslim world. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm simply reading the facts that we got from Gary Bauer today. where he's talking about the poll among American Muslims, and he is very, very distressed. He thinks we should all be distressed by the attitude of the American Muslims. Though the poll was conducted by the well-respected Pew Research Center and surveyed over 1,000 U.S. Muslims on a variety of topics. Here are some of the key findings. Only 26% of the United States Muslims believe the war on terror is a sincere effort to reduce terrorism. Only 26% of U.S. Muslims believe the war on terror is a sincere effort to reduce terrorism. Well, how do you feel about that? Do you believe that we are really trying to reduce terrorism? Because if that's what we're doing over the Middle East, we're doing a terrible job, and even many of our military commanders and the analysts will tell you that we have far more Islamic terrorism and far more evidence of radical Islam today than we had, say, in September of 2001. And, of course, many of the Iraqis who welcomed America when we came in to free them from Saddam Hussein are now, of course, among the resistors over there fighting America because they feel we're occupying their land and we're there to steal their oil. Now, I don't know how you feel about that, but there are a lot of Iraqis who feel very, very strongly and are willing to give their lives. The number of Al-Qaeda over there in Iraq is somewhere between 1,300 and about 2,000. Now, that's all the Al-Qaeda that is really there, and they're largely financed by our good friends, the Saudis, who are such good friends of the current administration. However, the spread of the radical Islamic belief is really, really disturbing to me. And certainly as we look and see what's going on in Turkey today, why, if an election were held, a free election were held, I rather fear that the radical form of Islam would convert Turkey from, you know, a secular state into an Islamic state. I think the same thing would happen in Egypt, certainly would happen in Saudi Arabia, it would happen in Kuwait, and probably in most of the other Muslim nations. If we allowed a democratic election, but we're not going to allow democratic elections anyplace, because the radical Islamists would take over, and they would not have taken over. I mean, very, very few people involved in radical as Islam before the attack on September 11, 2001. So the question is, are we really, fighting terrorism in the Middle East? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and the question was raised, are we really fighting terrorism in the Middle East? Only 26% of U.S. Muslims believe that the war on terror is a sincere effort to reduce terrorism. And I'm simply pointing out that if we are trying to fight terrorism, we failed miserably. Because there is far more terrorism in the world today. And far more people are embracing this radical form of Islam than before this whole thing started back in September of 2001. So should we be critical of United States Muslims for saying we don't think this is a sincere effort to cut back on terrorism? Of course, if we were really fighting on terrorism, why, we would have sealed the southern border of our country immediately after 9/11. We would have certainly allowed racial profiling of people getting on the planes. Every plane would have had air marshals on them instead of less than 10%. The pilots would all be armed. We would be guarding our borders. We'd be checking all of the baggage going onto the planes, not just a little of it. I mean, if this were really a war on terrorism, why was it back there when it was we were involved in a war in Bosnia? We were backing Al Qaeda. When we were involved in the war in Kosovo, we were backing Al Qaeda. Why didn't we try to get Osama bin Laden after when he was in the mountains of Tor Bor in December of 2001? Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling here, and Ray's calling from Santa Cruz. So, again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we have open lines. And we want to know about your attitude towards what's going on in the Middle East. Are we really involved in a war on terrorism? Are we really effective in our battle against terrorism? Or are we encouraging terrorism by our policies? We've been fighting in Afghanistan over 5.5 years. We've been fighting in Iraq over 4 years. Are we really trying to fight terrorism? Or is this Vietnam all over again? Okay, Ray, do you have a question or comment? I'd like to know what you think.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about what I said last night about the war in Iraq, and it seems to me, although I don't think they're going to follow this at all, it seems to me that they established the benchmarks for the Iraqi government to take over, you know, and take command over their own country, and at the same time, when those benchmarks are met, each time we start withdrawing troops and money a little at a time, both money and troops at the same time. It just seems to me that would be the only way we could get out of there, really.
Well, but you see, do we really intend to get out of
there?
Yeah,
that's right. Well, that
if we really intended to get out, why are we building a 100-acre embassy there? Why are we building the biggest embassy in the entire world in Baghdad? Why are we building all these new army bases over there?
Yeah.
And as long as we have our occupation troops there, there's going to continue to be violence. I mean, we've won the Second World War in 1945, yet we still have our troops stationed in Germany. We won the war with Japan in 1945.
Right.
We still have 60,000, 40,000 to 60,000 troops stationed in Japan. We still have 30,000 or 40,000 troops stationed in South Korea. We have troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world. Do you really think we're going to pull our troops out of Iraq? And as long as our troops are there, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, the people are going to continue to oppose us, and they're going to be suicide bombers in an unstable society. The only part of Iraq that is stable at all is Kurdistan. We have a unified group and very little racial animosity, because Kurdistan has always been a separate country, and they're very happy with the Americans coming and freeing them from the yoke of Saddam Hussein's tyranny, especially since the United States backed Iraq, backed Saddam Hussein. He was an employee of the CIA starting in 1959, and anybody who doubts that, we have books written 15 years ago that talk about that. Everybody in the world knows it except the American people. Well, anyway, I agree with you.
Yeah.
We could get out of there if we wanted to. We would divide the country into three parts. We would divide the oil equally, proportional to population, and we could leave tomorrow, but we don't intend for a logical plan to get out. We want to justify keeping our troops there. And if there are peace tomorrow, how could we possibly justify staying and using that 100-plus acre embassy we've been spending $100 million or more to build?
Yeah. You know, that's what's so tragic about this whole thing is that they knew once we went in there was no way out. So that's why they hurried up. That's why Bush, we got to get rid of Saddam, right away, So Congress says, okay, that's all right. And then we get in there, and then there's no way out. It could have been prevented if Congress would have done something in the beginning, about Bush, about his plans, but it's too late. I think it's too late.
And, of course, basically everything points to the fact that there is a plan to go to war with Iran. We need a staging a platform for an attack on Iran, another part of the axis of evil. Now, we can't tell the American people that because the vast majority are very unhappy with the war in Iraq. That's why the Republicans...
75%.
Right. The Republicans lost the Congress, in the last election because of the war in Iraq. And, of course, but it doesn't matter what the American people want. The people who really run things want, of course, not only to continue the war in Iraq, they want to take us into a war with Iran and with the Muslim world. And that's why we've adopted this new word, this catchword that's designed to engender hatred. We call it them, the Islamofascists, them.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to do is get us to hate the Muslims, and then they can get the Muslims to hate us, because how can you get people to kill one another if they don't hate one another?
That's right, yeah. Oh, it's very ingenious.
You know, one of the things that really bothers me more than anything is the support for torture. And in the Republican debate, so many of the Republicans spoke out in favor of torture. I don't know. I didn't hear John McCain's remarks, but everybody else seemed to be in favor of it, except for Ron Paul, who said torture is morally wrong. But I'm waiting to see some of the leading religious leaders of this country, the Christians leaders of this country, speak out against torture. And have you noticed that nobody wants to speak out against torture?
Oh,
and yet it's wrong. You know it's wrong.
Everybody knows it's wrong.
I mean, every Christian knows it's wrong, and yet our religious leaders are willing to go along with it because they don't have the courage to speak out, and they have far more fear of government than they do of God.
They have a program on TV on Fox. It's called 24 or something. It justifies torture. This program on TV justifies our torturing captives, you know, people, you know, from Al-Qaeda and whatever. And it's actually a program on TV. And the guy that produces it is a good friend of Dick Cheney.
I'm sure you understand, Ray, that television is used to condition our mind, to mold our ideas, to create our very thoughts. Television is a vehicle by which we are controlled. Anything else you'd like to say?
I'm unable to get I guess your transmitter hasn't gone off.
No, our transmitter's back on now. You should be able to get us fine.
Okay, is it 89.9,
right.
Okay, well, I'll do it.
All right, fine. If you don't get it, give us a call. Let us know, but it should be working fine.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, thanks very much. Well, let's go to Steve, who's calling us from Richland, Washington. Remember now, this is Open Line Wednesday, and you're welcome to call in. You can talk about what I'm talking about. You can bring up another subject. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And because this is when we'd like to get your thoughts. And Steve, did you have a question, comment? You agree or you disagree?
I had a little comment. Last night you pointed out that almost all of the GOP presidential candidates except one were in line with the rest of the neoconservatives and supporting Bush and this war in Iraq. And so I wanted to just bring up Ron Paul a little bit, give him some airtime. I've noticed on Mike Savage and Rush Limbaugh and the other conservative talk show hosts that there seems to be a real concerted effort to put down Ron Paul and say he doesn't have a chance, he's a wacko, he's a libertarian, and you know, I know you've followed him for years and I've followed him for years. He's truly a conservative that seems to be concerned with some issues in America. And I thought he's worth supporting.
Your point is well made. Certainly of people like Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh, the finest conservatives money could buy. If they were telling you the truth, they would not have all those radio stations across the country, you know, carrying their programs. The difficulty is that, you know, here for the first time, really going back to, I think 1964, we have somebody who is really verbalizing what most Americans feel, because most Americans are God-fearing people, they're good people, who really want to limit the power of government over the lives of the people. And that's the message of Ron Paul. He supports the Constitution. The rest of the people there, have you noticed they don't talk about the Constitution? They don't talk about cutting back on big government. I mean, they don't talk about the things that the Republican Party has traditionally stood for. And that is why, of course, there's a tremendous fear on the part of America's invisible government, and we do have an invisible government, which we talk about in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, but there is an invisible government that wants a fascist society. And, of course, they've done everything they could to undermine our Constitution and to centralize power in Washington, D.C., and the one man speaking out. Hang on there, Steve. We'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest right now is Steve from Richland, Washington, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
One 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and certainly Steve has brought up the candidacy of Ron Paul. I'd like to know what you think about that. I'd like to know what you think about should we be there fighting in Iraq, or should we simply pull our troops out? Should we try to cut back on big government? Should we try to preserve the constitutional foundation of this nation, or should we simply go along the way we're going and hope maybe things will straighten themselves out? Should we perhaps just ignore what's going on and just live life every day as best we can and be unconcerned about the sort of future we're going to leave for our children? I think these are all questions which everybody in the listening audience really has to ask. Do we have an obligation to be involved, and should we be backing Rush Limbaugh? And why is there so much talk about him? Certainly he's only one of the candidates, and at least according to the television pundits, why nobody agrees with him. And yet if you look at the polls, he overwhelmingly won the first television debate. He came in a very, very close second to Romney in the second television debate. And he is getting people to begin asking the question, you know, are we on the right track, or should we try to get back to the fundamentals that once made America the greatest nation in the world, the most envied nation in the world? Well, go ahead, Steve, let's get your thoughts. And once again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. What are your thoughts, Steve? Anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
No, you know, the war in Iraq, which seems to be most of what your conversation is, it's just a horribly complicated mess. I would have been 100% against not going there in the first place, but once you're there, it's a very tricky situation to get out of. And
well, what do you think? What do you think we should do? What should we stay until we've won the war? And if we won the war, what would that mean?
Well, I would like to see some clear objectives. You know, the similarities between this and Vietnam are just frightening. We're just sort of wallowing around with no goal in mind. You know, if they want to set Iraq up as a platform to run into Iran and start a war there, then have them be forthright with it and say that's what they're doing. You know, we're already there. We can't just pull out. The civil war and the mayhem that would follow would be far worse than what things are now. I like your idea of dividing the country up into three pieces, but that doesn't work real well either, because the Kurds have a huge population in Turkey and a fairly large population in Iran, and both Turkey and Iran are very sensitive to the Kurds trying to create their own nation. In fact, I'm taking a human geography class right now in college, and they refer to the Kurds as the largest nation in the world without a nation.
Right.
And it's particularly in Turkey. They're a very threatening force there. And so there are no simple answers. We should have never gone there in the first place. But so long as we're there, we ought to have some clearly defined objective and then accomplish that goal and get out.
So what do you think the objective should be?
I don't know.
okay, you know, fine. Well, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
And have a good night, Dan.
Okay, and let's go to Donnie, who's calling from... Donnie, is that you?
Hi.
Hi, what city are you calling from?
Ephrata, Washington.
Ephrata, Washington. Where is that now?
It's about 3 hours east of Seattle.
Okay, well, are you getting us on the from one of the stations, the American Christian Network?
Yes, I am, ACN.
Okay, well, I'm real glad. Anyway, do you have a question or comment?
I have a question. My understanding is that after House Resolution 192, we in 1955, we moved away from the Constitution and to be governed by a uniform commercial code, and I just wanted to kind of get a little understanding from you.
Well, I think that there are people who do not believe in the Constitution. The Constitution is still the law of the land. You can pass all the legislation you want to, but you can't change the foundation of our nation, which is the Constitution. The only way to change the Constitution is by amending the Constitution. There are people who hate the Constitution. They'll do everything they can to say, oh, we're not under the Constitution anymore, or the Constitution is evolving. But this is all a cover for the dictatorship they hope to espouse. So, yes, the Constitution is not very much respected by the people in government. But, of course, the definition of a terrorist is somebody who wants to change our former government. And there's an awful lot of terrorists in Washington, D.C. right today. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment.
It's a sad goodbye. You never had a chance. Never
Dr. Stan back here. Our guest right now we have calling from Ephra, Washington, is Donnie. And so these people try to tell you, yes, we're not operating under the Constitution. They're absolutely right. But, of course, that's just because we have lawbreakers from Washington, D.C. If they want to change our form of government, let's amend it. Let's have a discussion. But don't do this in a sneaky, dishonest fashion as they are. And this is funded largely by the great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the other usual suspects.
I don't know if a lot of listeners know that crime isn't something we really, in our government, want to crack down on. It's written into the books as commercial gain.
Right. Okay, anything else you'd like to say, Donnie?
No, I just wanted to hear your take on the Uniform Commercial Code, especially how it applies in our judicial system.
Well, of course, our judicial system is a disaster. It has been ever since it was taken over by the Masons back in 1941 when they took over the United States Supreme Court. And for 30 years, the Masons, who are part of a secret society that worships a being known as Yabal-O, and Yah is for Yahweh, Baal is for Baal, the devil, and O is for Osiris. And they control the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And it was during those years that they took God prayer out of our schools, and none of our religious leaders will discuss that.
You said 1941?
1941 to 1971.
Wow, I didn't know that. I really appreciate
that. If you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's a good place to get started.
Well, I've been studying the Illuminati and all the associations with the Freemasons.
No, but of course, if you read my book, you'll find it there. And of course, you'll find this referenced in Paul Fisher's book, Behind the Lodge Door. You can actually get the list of the Masonic Supreme Court justices on your own. They're posted up on the Internet. You realize what I'm telling you is true. But so many of the books on Illuminati and Masonry will not tell you the truth. They're written not to reveal, but to conceal the truth from the American people. And it was the Masonic influence in the Supreme Court that took God out of our schools because they wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of America, knowing that was the only thing that would preserve our freedom. For where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, and they didn't want liberty. They want a tyranny under their God, and their God is Yabal-O. Okay, anything else you want to say?
No, thank you so much.
Good night, God bless, and we'll be with Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz, in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Did you have an announcement you wanted to make?
I sure did, Stan. Thank you very much for the chance to do this. I wanted to tell the audience about Dr. Bob Bowman coming to the Monterey and Santa Cruz area on two evenings, two separate venues in the middle of June, June 13th and June 14th. For those who don't know much about Dr. Bob, he's got a humongous 9/11 cover-up thrust to expose whatever truth we know about 9/11 and how that happened.
Whereabouts is he going to be talking?
Yeah. The first event is June 14th, as I said, in the Monterey area at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Monterey. That's at 490 Aguajito Road. And the phone number for more information is area code 831-375-2016. And then the following night in Santa Cruz, June 14th, he'll be speaking for a couple of hours here at 611 Ocean Street in Santa Cruz. And the phone number for information there is, again, 831-477-4556, and I'd like to give those two phone numbers again.
Go ahead.
The Monterey phone number is 375-2016, and for the Santa Cruz event, the information is 877-4556. And the proceeds will go for primarily for Bob Bowman's event. We're only trying to recoup some of our costs. And you should check his website at thepatriot.us. I would like to spell that thepatriots.us. And you'll find all sorts of information. He's speaking all around the country for the whole summer at about 120 cities. He and his wife are traveling around and doing this as a service to America.
All right. Well, he will be hopefully here with Radio Liberty a couple of nights before he appears. And if you need more information, you can call us and we'll get those numbers for you. Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. And now, again, we have, we had a gentleman calling. We somehow lost. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And now, who's on the line here now?
I guess Mike's gone.
Mike's gone. Who's this?
Mike is still on.
Oh, Mike is still on. Okay, Mike.
Bye.
Thanks very much. Okay. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So let me just mention that there is going to be a conspiracy conference. It's going to be held this coming weekend in the Santa Clara area. And, of course, here you'll see people from the right, the left, and not only the political right and political left, but from the spiritual right and the spiritual left. And if you're interested in having more information, the number is 209-832-0999. Of course, speaking will be Edward Griffin, certainly one of my favorites, Joyce Riley's husband, certainly from the Power Hour. And then, of course, William Grigg is going to be there. A lot of great speakers are going to have. And Ashley Moat's going to be there from the European Union. I've been asked to introduce him. He's a member of the European Parliament that meets in that building in Strasbourg that's designed after the unfinished Tower of Babel that was built by Nimrod. And really so much of what's going on today ties back to Nimrod's effort to create a one-world government, 5,000 years ago. And, of course, the unfinished Tower of Babel, there's a very, very famous painting. It was painted, I think, in the 1500s. And that then became the basis of a poster that is actually used in Europe that says, "Many tongues, but one voice." And, of course, if you look at the unfinished Tower of Babel as it's presented there, it's surrounded by stars. And the points are all down, which means, of course, it's to worship Satan. And then, because this is the real goal of the people who are working behind the scenes, why they actually have built the building that houses the North American Union in Strasbourg to simulate the unfinished Tower of Babel. So we hope, of course, that you'll want to come and hear Mr. Ashley Moat speaking. The telephone number for the conspiracy conference, first of all, is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or you can go up on the Internet at conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. And we'll have a table there, and certainly I know other good people who have tables there. Got to be some people you will disagree with, and rightfully so. But I think if you pray, you'll enjoy. But pray for protection and pray for understanding, because we're involved in a spiritual battle, and some of the very dark forces will be there as well. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'd like to get your thoughts. We started out today talking about the Pew Research survey of 1,000 U.S. Muslims that found only 26% of U.S. Muslims believe that the war on terror is a sincere effort to reduce terrorism. And as I simply pointed out, I agree with that. I mean, if we're really trying to reduce terrorism, we're doing a terrible job, because there's far more people have been recruited into the terrorist movement since we started attacking first Afghanistan and then Iraq and now our plans to attack Iran. There's far more terrorists in the world than there ever were before. And my fear is, of course, everything's being done, working through the intelligence agencies and the dark side of government to foment hatred of America, to actually promote belief in this radical form of Islam and the return of the Mahdi and all of these archaic beliefs of the Muslim faith of antiquity. We're doing everything we can to create Muslim hatred of America and America's hatred of Muslims, not only Muslims in other countries, but Muslims right here. And then the report went on to say just 12% of the Muslims in the United States support the decision to invade Iraq. And only 35% believe we made the right decision in using military force in Afghanistan. Well, how do you feel? Do you think we should have gone into Afghanistan and not tried to get Osama bin Laden? Because we never went there to try to get Osama bin Laden. I mean, we had men on the ground. We had boots on the ground in Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden was trapped at Tora Bora, along with the remnant of Al-Qaeda. And the Americans were not allowed to try to get him. Osama bin Laden was allowed to escape into Pakistan. So then why didn't we pursue him? And then why, of course, did we attack Iraq instead of finishing off the terrorists? And after all, weren't they the ones we were after, or was this all simply a ruse? And since Osama bin Laden is not in Afghanistan today, why are we still there fighting? Now, you will be told we were fighting the Taliban. After all, the Taliban are wicked. But where did the Taliban come from? The word Taliban means student. And, of course, the United States had appropriated $52 million for textbooks that were used in the madras schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan to actually encourage this radical Islamic belief. Anybody would like to verify that, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you an article out of the Washington Post on this. It's covered in many other areas. The CIA was financing indoctrination of the Mujahideen and this radical form of Islam during the Afghan War from 1980 to 1988, and of course right along with Pakistani intelligence, which is an extension of the CIA, and Saudi Arabia. They were all working, of course, to promote this radical form of Islam. And so the Taliban were a outgrowth of that. The Taliban then were organized about 1994. And if you read the book, The Unholy Wars by John Cooley, who was the foreign correspondent for Christian Science Monitor, he will tell you how the United States CIA financed the Taliban initially and how Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, the three of them, sort of an unholy trinity, financed the Taliban from the inception, and then, of course, we continued financing the Taliban. And in fact, we were giving, according to George Bush, if you read his speech of September 20th, 2001, it's available on his website at whitehouse.gov. That's September 2001 speech. President Bush will tell you the United States was the largest source of humanitarian aid for the Afghanistan in the year 2001. Well, now, if we were financing the Taliban, which of course, if we're financing Afghanistan, we're financing the Taliban, why were we doing that when they were hosting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who was already held to be responsible for the attack on the embassy in Kenya and Tanzania, was known to have been responsible for the attack on the USS Cole in the year 2000 and responsible for other terrorist attacks throughout the world. Why would we be financing the Taliban, you know, right up until the very day of the attack, and then suddenly we want to go to war with them? There are a lot of unanswered questions. Even more is one we pointed out before, and we hope that you people are suspicious out there in the audience and you'll try to prove us wrong. I want you to go up on the internet and Google in FBI 10 Most Wanted Men. and or 10 Most Wanted, and you'll come up with the FBI page, and there's a picture of Osama bin Laden, one of the 10 Most Wanted. So pull up his picture and read it. And what's he wanted for? He's wanted for his involvement in the bombing of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, and he's suspected of other terrorist activities throughout the world. The most amazing FBI post he ever saw, not one mention of September 11th. And that's the reason we went into Afghanistan, isn't it? It's because of September 11th. And so, you know, is it possible this is a misprint? Is it possible the FBI doesn't know that we went into Afghanistan and killed tens of thousands of people because Osama bin Laden was involved with September 11th? Is it possible that everything has happened is a mistake? Is it possible that this is all a lie and all of these deaths are unnecessary? Is it possible that there are powerful spiritual forces that are manipulating America, indeed the whole of the world, into a terrible conflict between the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims to destroy them all? And if you doubt that that is the case, and that is my contention, I hope that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, RadioLiberty.com, and of course pull down our February 2007 article. Read not what I say, but what the other side says. Who are the other side? Well, you read the article, you'll find out about Alice Bailey, who was a channeler for the demonic spirits, a demonic spirit known as Chua Kul, who came from the other dimension and dictated, I think, 25 or 26 books to her. But what did Chua Kul tell Alice Bailey, who was the inspiration, incidentally, for George Bush's remarks about the 1,000 points of light and the term the New World Order, which George Herbert Walker Bush used for the first time on September the 11th of the year 1990. Well, let's go ahead and hear from Jack from Michigan. So, Jack, did you have a question or comment?
Well, Dr. Stan, I tell you, it's always an immensely enlightening experience to hear you. It's just phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Now, flatterer, not going to get you any place, but go ahead, Jack. That's good to hear from you.
Hey, you know, you'd be like my eldest brother that I've never had. I mean, you're a scholar. It almost seems like you have a photographic memory. You know, to answer your question about the humanitarian aid to Afghanistan, do you think in the infinite wisdom of the intelligence community, they thought that perhaps they would subsidize the cultivation of the opium poppies in a way similar to what they do here with tobacco, and they would just get everybody there, the Afghan people, whatever, smoking the opium, and then they'd all be happy, and then Halliburton, whoever, would come in and say, okay, let's build a pipeline.
No, actually, what the Taliban did is the Taliban cut back on the opium production. Since we took over Afghanistan, and we've really controlled it since January of 2002, why, we have actually allowed the production of opium to massively expand. We control the whole country, but all shucks, we just can't do anything at all about opium production. But when those wicked Taliban were there, they cut back on the opium production, and it dropped off dramatically. Maybe it was they were cutting into the profits of the Central Intelligence Agency, which is the largest purveyor of opium and heroin in the world. And for anybody who doubts that, we carry a book called Drugging America, written by Rodney Stitch, who was sent to prison under trumped-up charges, and there he had the chance to meet a number of CIA and DEA and FBI agents who tried to get the truth out about what's going on as far as the American government's involvement in the drug smuggling, and of course they were sent to prison. That's why in America today we have the largest police state in the world. We have over 7 million people on either in prison, probation, or parole. In fact, that's far more proportionally than they have in communist China. And yet, nobody will tell you that. This is why our prisons are so overcrowded. Many of these people are innocent people. Of course, some of them are drug dealers, admittedly, and some of them are real criminals, but many of them, of course, are former government agents who tried to tell the truth. Let me suggest the book Drugging America and Defrauding America by Rodney Stitz. Must reading for anybody who really wants to understand what's going on today. Hey, just hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment, and we've got time for one more call, if there is one. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I hope you've enjoyed our open lines. I always enjoy them and I look forward to them. Hope you do as well. Love to hear from you. Be right back. Well, Jack, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Dr. Stan, that begs the question from me then. I presume the Central Insurrection Agency is self-funding through these clandestine programs.
Absolutely, then. Right. I mean, the CIA runs all sorts of black operations and ties into probably intelligence agencies you and I have never heard of. But
no.
There's a dark side of the CIA. There's a good side of the CIA. There are a lot of people who really believe in America,
yep,
working at all of the intelligence agencies. But there is a dark side. There's the skull and bone side. The skull and bones always has a contingent in the CIA that, of course, is working surreptitiously towards this goal of the New World Order, the New World Religion.
Well, all we can do is call attention to it and hope that the Lord will help us out.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, we have to, you know, if we want to change America, we're going to have to start with you and me, and then we can go on to others. And, of course, we need to get people to understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle. There really is another dimension out there. There really are demonic beings from this other dimension that have an agenda, and that is they want a world government. They want a world religion. They want to destroy Christianity, and they certainly want the New World Leader. And they believe the New World Leader is waiting to appear on the scene. We live, Jack, in the most exciting times in all of history, and the important thing, first thing, is we have to be sure that we and our families have a personal relationship with the Lord, because that is all that's going to see us through what lies ahead.
Yes, amen. Well, God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank you for the most excellent work you do.
God bless, and thanks. Good to hear from you, Jack.
You.
Okay, well, our telephone number, of course, is... we're just about out of time, but remember for next week, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And Chris, if any of you out there would, we'll make the announcement as far as the station. Well, like we can right now, because people certainly across the nation are not be interested. But if you are living in the Santa Cruz Monterey Bay area, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to helping KFER pay for the transmitter. If you can help us, remember, this is not Radio Liberty. This is KFER, the Santa Cruz Educational Broadcasting Foundation, which is the station we broadcast on locally as part of our network across the nation. But it's post office. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I certainly wanted to mention, if you'd like to help the KFER radio station here in Santa Cruz, run by the Santa Cruz Educational Broadcasting Foundation, that lost our transmitter this last week, and we had to go out and buy a new expensive one. Why, if you'd like to help us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but certainly this is not Radio Liberty. This is KFER, and if you'd like to contribute, the address is Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063, and this is tax-deductible. Radio Liberty is not tax-deductible. because we want to be able to say what we think on issues. But, of course, the KFER is tax-deductible, and we do hope that many of you will, if you can, will want to contribute, because, believe me, we wanted very much to get back on the air. We think this is such an important time to be able to get the message out, and it is fascinating how many people did call in who listen to our programs regularly here in the Monterey Bay area. A voice of sanity in a world gone mad. Anyway, you can reach us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Well, this is the time then for Radio Liberty. I want to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported and entirely different than KFER. And, of course, if you're interested in joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is not tax-exempt, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. To really understand how this all fits together, let me suggest that we have a series of pamphlets we put together on 911, and it's called $4 911. It's a compilation of about 15 letters we wrote, and you'll really have this whole story of what happened on that terrible, terrible day, and the 11th of September 2001. Or, for a more brief summary, let me suggest the newsletters. They're posted on the internet site at RadioLiberty.com from August until December of the year 2006. Pull those down, copy them, help us to get them out. And then, of course, if you want to understand the spiritual battle, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, our new talk, Forbidden Secret, and then, of course, we have the new four-tape set, The Secret Behind the Secret, which exposes the Rhonda Byrne and her program that has sold 4,000 books, or I should say 4 million books, and, of course, 2 million DVDs. That's The Secret, 4 million books, 2 million DVDs, and, of course, we hope that you want to understand what this is really all about. And what it really is all about is introducing millions of Americans into demonic possession. So that's the fourth tape set, The Secret Behind the Secret. To put things into a little clearer perspective, we have a DVD or a VHS, a talk that Constance Cumby gave at our last conference. It's called The Emergence. We have a talk that Chris Pinto gave, and Chris has put together the award-winning DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and certainly the riddles in stone, the secret architecture of our nation's capital. But if you would like to get an overview of his talk, it's available on VHS and soon will be available on DVD, entitled The Atlantis Connection. And you say, what does Atlantis have to do with anything? It has everything to do with it, because, you see, there are many people who believe that America is to be the new lost Atlantis that will guide the world to the new world order, the new world religion, the new world leader. We truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan Baker at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guest. And this evening, our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson, who has was a professor at MB Anderson Clinic in Texas before he and his wife were forced to leave that area because of the threats to their life. And the story is told in the book we carry, a very important book called Project Daylily. And that's with one L in Lily, because this was the project by which many of the new diseases were created that are plaguing America and so much of the world today. Dr. Nicholson, thank you very much for being with us again.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Well, it's always a pleasure having you. Well, is there anything new in this whole field of these chronic diseases that are already plaguing so many of our listeners, the Lyme disease, the chronic fatigue syndrome, AIDS, this myriad of diseases that already are creating these chronic illnesses that really are fibromyalgia? Certainly, what do you think, 3 or 4 million people are afflicted, or anything more?
Well, it's probably more if you consider that there are the various variants of these fatiguing illnesses, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia syndrome, Gulf War illness, it goes under various names. There, besides the fatiguing illnesses, there are neurodegenerative diseases that are increasing rapidly, actually skyrocketing incidence of these, including things like multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Alzheimer's disease, and a variety of other diseases. And we've been working on this area ourselves recently. I did want to talk mainly about Lyme disease.
All right, fine.
Because we've done some recent work on Lyme disease, and I'm actually presenting at a Lyme disease conference in June, and I was just actually making up some of my slides, which I have to turn in earlier, for medical credits. You have to turn in your presentation in advance. This is a very interesting situation where now children coming down with Lyme disease are showing up with autism and attention deficit disorder. This is not unusual to us because we knew that from our studies that we've just published in the Journal of Neurological Sciences that a very high percentage of these children in the 60% range have mycoplasmal infections. And the most common co-infection with Lyme disease, which is caused by the spirochete, Borrelia burgdorferi, is mycoplasma. In about 70% of cases of Lyme disease, mycoplasma is present. And there are other also co-infections that are present. Lyme disease is a very complex illness, and its origin is very mysterious. Not mysterious to some people, but to the general public it's very mysterious. It evolved supposedly as an outbreak in Old Lyme, Connecticut a number of years ago, but that wasn't the first incidence actually of the disease. The first incidence was really on Long Island, very close to Plum Island, which is the Department of Agriculture Research Station. And ironically, on Plum Island, they were doing experiments with ticks, which is the vector that carries and transmits Lyme disease. And they were working on all the various microorganisms that are found associated with Lyme disease on Plum Island, which is a little island right off the tip of Long Island. And it's ironic that all of a sudden this disease crops up on the mainland, just a bird's flight away from Plum Island in Connecticut, and then begins to spread from there all up in New England, in the Midwest, and now on the West Coast.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, I guess this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson, just talking about the background, the origin of Lyme disease. Now, certainly do you think that the ticks carrying the mycoplasm, you mentioned the relationship between Lyme disease, which is related to Borrelia, which is a spirochete, Eden, but so many of the children coming down with autism, seem to have this same disease as well. Are they getting this from the tick? Where are they getting it from?
Well, they could be getting it from tick bites because this is the common way that it's transmitted. Some of these infections can be transmitted in other ways. For example, the mycoplasma can be transmitted airborne. We know this is a fact in studying families where the disease has spread. There's a very interesting publication of ours showing that when the Gulf War veterans came home and had mycoplasmal infections, particularly Mycoplasma fermentans, which is the most common species of mycoplasma found in Lyme disease, as well as a co-infection, they actually spread this illness to their spouses and in their children within months to years after the vets came back with this infection. And interestingly, the wives came down with the chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia syndrome, but the children came down with autism, attention deficit disorder, Asperger's disease or syndrome, various autistic spectrum disorders. And so we started studying those separately, both in military families and in non-military families that had no contact with the military, and found that there was a very high incidence of these infections in both the military and non-military families that had autism and attention deficit disorder problems within the family. So we think this is an important element in the whole story. Now, going back to the link between childhood vaccines and autism, it's very interesting that the mycoplasma is one of the more common contaminants in commercial vaccines. As a matter of fact, one published study showed that 6% of commercial vaccines are contaminated with mycoplasma, and in most cases they're not even checked for mycoplasma infections. And this is the most shocking thing that people need to know about, because this very important infection is being avoided. And the reason it's being avoided has more to do with the politics than the medicine. But we'll get on that topic later on. But I want to go back to Lyme disease. I mentioned that it was first discovered in Old Lyme, Connecticut, and then began to spread. And the most common vector spreading it is really the various ticks, various species of ticks. And within the last few years, ticks have been collected.
Hold that thought for just a moment as we bring other stations on board here, please. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess Dr. Garth Nicholson, please go ahead there. Dr. Nicholson was saying, of course, that that they're collecting ticks now, looking for evidence of Lyme disease, and pick the story up there, please.
Well, when ticks were collected and examined in the Northeast, the Midwest, and now the West Coast, they were found to have anywhere from a few to as many as 20 different infections inside. They were just little bags of infection. And when they actually bite and latch hold of an individual and start sucking their blood, these infections can pass from the tick into the infected person. And so it's not just the Lyme spirochete, the Borrelia, but Mycoplasma, Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia, a number of other infectious agents are also transmitted at the same time. And people come down with this very difficult to treat Lyme disease. And the reason it's so difficult is it's caused by multiple infections, not just one infection. So we've been trying to figure out with other investigators how best to handle a situation when individuals have so many co-infections. It's often difficult to decide on how to treat them, because if you have different infections, it requires different approaches, different antibiotics, for example. And none of these infections respond very well to antibiotics. So although some physicians think that short-term antibiotics should be enough to cure the problem, once they become systemic or system-wide, the short-term antibiotics just don't work. They just don't get at these various forms of infectious agents that are deep in the tissues and shut them down. It just takes a long-term treatment, several courses of treatment, to really have any effect on these infections. And people with Lyme disease are often misdiagnosed. with chronic fatigue syndrome, and you mentioned that prominently in your introduction. In fact, probably the majority of people that have Lyme disease are misdiagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, particularly in non-Lyme-infested areas. In Lyme-infested areas, there are more on the lookout for Lyme disease, but in areas that are not as heavily infested, it's often difficult to determine if you have a syndrome like chronic fatigue syndrome, what it's caused by. So this is another key element in this situation. And in my presentation, we found that, for example, on the East Coast, probably 25 to 40% of chronic fatigue syndrome patients are actually Lyme patients in the Lyme-infested areas. And then the numbers go down in non-Lyme-infested areas. But even in non-Lyme-infested areas, this figure could be as high as 10%. So 10% of chronic fatigue syndrome patients are actually Lyme disease patients. So this is something that people that have these fatiguing illnesses need to be tested for, the various infections that are involved in Lyme disease. And it's not easy to get a positive test because these infections are hiding deep inside the tissues, and it's difficult to get at them with simple blood tests. And so it starts a long, whole process of multiple tests and retesting and so on to try and find out if these people have Lyme disease or mycoplasma or any of these types of infections that can cause these chronic illnesses. And these illnesses are much more serious than just fatiguing illnesses because they can progress, and as the spirochete and the mycoplasma and the other infections invade into the brain, then a number of other problems are caused. And I mentioned in children the fact that there seems to be a very high percentage now of children with behavioral disorders like autism, attention deficit disorder, Asperger's syndrome, and so on, that have these types of infections, and they probably underlie their condition along with other exposures, heavy metals and chemicals and so on. But now we feel that this is a very important aspect of their whole disease presentation. The fact that these chronic infections are involved means that the whole treatment process for these children is much more complicated than we initially thought.
And, of course, really, talking to people who have these diseases, you know, they have a hard time finding a doctor who will treat them because, as in the organized medicine, I think that if you're treating a chronic Lyme disease or chronic fatigue syndrome or, as in the, fibromyalgia for long-term antibiotics, you're sort of a quack. So there seems to be a division within medicine as to how these things should be approached. And at least 1 million people a day are out there with Lyme disease, a couple of million fibromyalgia, maybe 1 million with chronic fatigue, and we don't know how many with Gulf War syndrome. I mean, all these people are searching desperately for physicians, and it's so hard to find people who are really ready to stick their neck out and look after them.
Well, I get emails and telephone calls on a daily basis of people who are trying to find physicians, and unfortunately, the Institute for Molecular Medicine is a nonprofit research organization, and so we don't really keep lists of physicians, and we don't really have a mandate to refer people. So it's really difficult, like try and send them to organizations like the International Association for Lyme and Associated Diseases, for example. For people that have autoimmune diseases, the Road Back Foundation does supply lists of physicians. So there are various ways in which they can get help, the American Academy for Environmental Medicine and so on. But it's difficult because there are very few physicians that will treat these illnesses, particularly the infections involved with the illnesses, because they find that all of a sudden medical boards are going after them for treating things like Lyme disease and chronic fatigue syndrome and so on, which I find astonishing. But this is all part of the business of covering up these illnesses and covering up the penetration of these illnesses into mainstream medicine. And so it's very difficult. If you're a physician out there treating Lyme disease, you know that chronic Lyme disease has to be treated with long-term antibiotics, and often you have to change the antibiotics because of the multiple co-infections that are involved. And when you do this, all of a sudden the medical boards are getting very serious about going after you for doing this, because they don't consider it mainstream medicine. Well, mainstream medicine has done nothing for these patients. Standard 2-week treatment of antibiotics does nothing for someone with chronic Lyme disease. So that's what mainstream medicine has to offer, nothing of any help to these patients.
What antibiotics? I mean, in the past we've talked about the use of doxycycline orally. And, now, do these people need intravenous or simply oral medication? And which one of the antibiotics would you use, especially when you're looking at multiple different organisms?
Well, without getting into a lot of details, I'm going to just direct people to our website, because on our website, which again is www.immed.org, like a media.org, they can find information about Lyme disease and the co-infections in Lyme disease and some of the multiple treatments that have been successful against these multiple microorganisms that are present in Lyme patients. So that's the best place to start. Also, the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, ILADS, has a website, www.ilads.org, and there's information about Lyme disease and its treatment and so on. So there are places that people can go to get information, but they have to really be diligent, because it's difficult sorting through all the misinformation as well as the correct information about these various conditions. And, of course, the practicing physician out there, particularly the general practitioner, is just overwhelmed by all these problems and by all the propaganda that's out there on diseases like Lyme disease. And so it's very difficult for these physicians to be able to handle this. And there are very few specialists that handle things like Lyme disease. So this is one of the problems that we have, and the patients scramble around trying to find physicians, and their best bet is to go to Lyme disease support groups, because they know the best physicians in the area. So anybody that has Lyme disease, that's who they should contact, or the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society as well, to try and find physicians that were competent and able to treat these infections.
Well, I wish every practicing physician in America could read your book, Project Daylily, and catch a glimpse of what, because you inadvertently stumbled onto when you were down there at Emmy Anderson Clinic. And, I mean, the story is really so incredible that, I mean, this is the sort of thing that you'd expect from Tom Clancy or Michael Crichton, but certainly not from a professor of medicine, at a prestigious clinic. And yet, here we find you stumbling across this effort to cover up the existence of these terrible infectious diseases.
Well, at least we know that the reason for that was the fact that the U.S. Army had patented this particular infection and didn't really want people to know anything about it, because it would directly point right back at them and their testing programs. And the book Project Daylily is basically, we inadvertently stumble across this as one of the elements of the Gulf War illness, and also the testing programs in the prison system which were going on in Texas, and somehow this was being tested. We had no idea this was going on at the time, but we stumbled across this, and this is what the book goes into, all the horror that we had to put up with in stumbling across this major testing program, which was really a program for testing incapacitating biological warfare agents. So things like the mycoplasma, and also some people feel quite strongly that the Borrelia, the Lyme disease, and other types of infections like Brucella and so on, have been developed as incapacitating biological warfare agents. And once they're developed, they had to test them. And sometimes these things get loose from the laboratory. That's probably what happened with Lyme disease in Plum Island. Or in the case of the mycoplasma, they got loose because they were testing in the prison system, and the guards were getting sick, and the people in the infirmaries and the prisons were getting sick, and they were bringing the illnesses home to the communities, and the communities had skyrocketing incidents of multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, autoimmune diseases, you name it.
Well, of course, we're out there in the listening audience. We do hope that many of you would be interested in getting the book. We'll tell you later about Project Daylily. Many of you would like to see a page from Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, where he talks about, he writes in 1970, but how in the future, and he's referring to, suggested by 218, of course, would be able to create these chronic diseases to use against the enemy. Chronic diseases that would totally disable them so that we could go in and just take them over without fighting at all. We'll be right back here. If you'd like to see that, we do have that pages. Well, Dr. Nicholson, certainly people can then go to your website and get at least pointed in the right direction. But was there anything else you wanted to cover as far as Lyme disease was concerned?
Well, I think, again, this is a problem which is a very complex problem dealing with multiple infections. And this is, I think, the issue that the general public doesn't really know much about because it is complicated. So they're not just dealing with the Lyme spirochete, they're dealing with a number of other co-infections. And we kind of got involved in this whole area because the most important co-infection found in about 70% of cases is mycoplasma, and very prominent among that is Mycoplasma fermentans, which turns out to be the same species of mycoplasma that we found in the Gulf War veterans and in the prison system down in Texas that they were when they were testing. So it's kind of suspicious of why this one species ended up with the Lyme Borrelia in Lyme disease. Again, you know, there are certain things that can be said about that, but it's a very difficult matter to deal with in people that have these infections. This can result in all kinds of different problems, in addition to Lyme disease, which can then show up as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia syndrome, and a whole host of other autoimmune and inflammatory diseases. These infections on their own, something like the mycoplasma infection, are very prominent in chronic asthma, for example, and other conditions, chronic bronchitis, for example, in inflammatory bowel diseases, very important there, in a variety of different inflammation illnesses, in, for example, rheumatoid arthritis. About half of rheumatoid arthritis patients have mycoplasmal infections in their joints. And years ago, Dr. Brown, in fact, discovered this inadvertently, that mycoplasmas were involved in mycoplasma in rheumatoid arthritis, and developed ways to treat patients and was very successful. And this started the organization called the Road Back Foundation. So these types of infections can cause a myriad of different illnesses depending upon where the infection goes in your system. For example, if it goes to your synovium in the joints, it can cause rheumatoid arthritis. If it goes to your brain, it can cause a number of different disorders, which we've discussed, that have to do with neurodegeneration. Depending upon what area it goes to the brain, for example, it could determine whether you have multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease or some of the other problems associated with these infections. If you're a child, if you're very young, you could have a behavioral disorder because of the developmental process of the brain. These disorders or these infections cause different problems in children. And so that's the thing that we've been working with most recently have been children. And children have all kinds of problems because of these infections. And they're very common. Now, in California, for example, it's claimed that 1 out of 7 children in California, after their childhood vaccinations, or showing signs of autism or various autistic spectrum disorders. And that's an astounding percentage of young people that are coming down with this. So, and we see this virtually all over the country where the young people are affected and the old people who are particularly sensitive to these sorts of things. These infections, if they get in the heart, for example, in older people, like my father had this problem, it attacked his heart valve. And he was lucky because we discovered that he had a mycoplasma pneumonia infection, and it was successfully treated because I convinced his cardiologist that this was a major problem, and he recovered. He's now just passed his 95th birthday, and this happened 15 years ago. So
hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Nicholson's pointing out that these chronic mycoplasma infections can actually, of course, involve the heart valves. They can involve certainly the joints with rheumatoid-like symptoms. They can involve the brain in the young with autism, with the elderly with certainly the neurodevelopmental abnormalities we talk about, certainly the MS, Lou Gehrig's disease. What about Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease? Do they ever manifest in those conditions?
Well, certainly there's a percentage of the Parkinson's patients that have these infections, and the Alzheimer's patients we're just beginning to find out about, and the answer there is yes, we're not quite sure of the percentage of Alzheimer's patients that have these infections, but it's going to be fairly high, and it's probably in those diseases a contributory factor. It may not cause it, but it contributes to the problem, and it exacerbates the problem. And that's probably true for a lot of these disorders. Practically all the disorders that I've been mentioning have a genetic element, the genetic susceptibility element. So people with one genetic background, for example, might be more prone to inflammatory disease if they have these infections, where somebody with a different genetic background, it might manifest itself in the neurodegenerative diseases. So, again, that's an important thing that we don't really know a lot about, the genetic susceptibility to these various diseases. But it's an important element. Also, the various environmental exposures are important. We live in a very toxic environment, and people are exposed to everything from heavy metals to chemicals and so on, and these have an important bearing on these illnesses as well. So all these different complex interactions between environmental toxins, infections, genetic makeup, and so on, it's a very difficult to unravel all the different aspects of these diseases, but we do know that these infections are very important in the overall process.
Well, now, have you had a chance to look at any of the people coming back from the second Gulf War? Because we know that within about 3 months, about 30% of these young people who do come back are ill. And, of course, it's like it was with the first Gulf War. Oh, it's post-traumatic stress. Oh, it's personality disorder. Too bad. Just take a Prozac, go home and shut up. But these young people, 30% of the returning veterans within 3 months are ill, and many of them seem to be carrying these diseases indefinitely. Do we know anything about the disease associated with Gulf War II?
Well, it's deja vu all over again. At least some of them are coming back with Gulf War illnesses, similar but not quite the same as we found in the first Gulf War. Probably not as severe as we found in the first Gulf War, because there over 28,000 died after the first Gulf War conflict, and that's not a number that's widely known. Over 250,000 became sick, and a very high percentage, probably as high as 40% of those were due to chronic infections like the mycoplasma infection that we've discussed before, Mycoplasma fermentans. One of the aspects of the first Gulf War, which they may have corrected, is the fact that during deployment, deployed soldiers and Marines were being given multiple vaccinations all at once. They were being given as many as 30 different vaccines within a three-day period during deployment. And, of course, this doesn't really immunize you. This immunosuppresses you, given all these vaccines at one time. So people went over to the Gulf. They were immunosuppressed, many of them, and that probably increased their susceptibility to these various disorders. So we're not probably seeing as high a percentage of the fatal diseases or the really severe diseases in the group coming back from Gulf War II, although there are some that have come back because, guess what, they're using the same vaccines, like the anthrax vaccine that they used in the first Gulf conflict. They are doing one thing, though. They've learned that the regimen that they used for immunization was all wrong, and so they've spread these out, so they are being given generally over a six-month period, which is much more appropriate. But nonetheless, we feel that some of these vaccines are contaminated. In fact, the VA confirmed this with mycoplasma and other infectious agents, and some of them are coming down with these infections all over again. And are they admitting it? No. Are they claiming that it's still post-traumatic stress disorder? Yes. Is it PTSD? Probably not. There are probably a number of other things that probably explain it, but I don't think it's PTSD.
Well, what a terrible tragedy when these young men do return from the war. They only then very, very shortly thereafter to come down with this chronic disabling disease. And certainly it sounds like certainly almost a third of the victims of the first Gulf War have those diseases, and now a third of the victims of the second Gulf War. They come back, they survive, they didn't lose an arm or a leg, or they didn't die, but now they have a chronic disease that seems to be with them most of the rest of their lives. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Dr. Garth Nicholson. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Dr. Nicholson, somebody talking about the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War. And, of course, the one thing that they have done, at least with the second Gulf War, supposedly they're going to spread out the frequency of these shots, and they're not getting six or eight shots at one time, although I did have an instance recently where a good friend of mine's son is in the Coast Guard, and they suddenly decided to send him over there, and they were going to give him six shots in a day or 2 days, and my friend was just so upset about that that, he pulled every string he possibly could, and fortunately, they left this young man go over there with a temporary, not having to get those vaccines, because it was either that or his simply disobeying an order and ruining his career as a Coast Guard officer. So, but sometimes, they have these rules and regulations, Dr. Nicholson. Doesn't matter whether it's logical or not. They're just going to go ahead and do it, irrespective of how much harm it does.
Well, that's part of the problem. When you're in the military, of course, you can't refuse an order like that without going to the brig, or being cashiered out of the military if you're an officer. So it's a very difficult situation that these young men and women find themselves in, having to refuse something that might hurt them. I don't know why they can't get their act straight on these military vaccines, but this has been a problem now for several years now, and they haven't been able to fix the problem. They want to use up the old vaccine lots, which are very suspect, before switching to newer vaccines. And we see the same thing, though, with children in our society. The vaccine manufacturers have pressed Congress so that they've given it more or less a pass so they can go through the older stocks of vaccines before replacing them, even if they know that there might be a problem with them. They want to sell them anyway and get a free pass from Congress so that they're essentially indemnified if there's any medical problems associated with the vaccine. So, I find that the situation is just intolerable with these vaccines. I'm not against vaccines in any way. They can be very useful if given the right way and if thoroughly examined to make sure that they're safe. So it's mainly the safety issues that I'm concerned with the vaccines and the fact that they're not being used in the best of all ways, in the most careful ways.
Because the thing that has served me is the vaccine manufacturers don't have enough confidence in the vaccines that they will actually, they say, we're not going to make any more vaccines unless you give us a free pass, and if kids die or killed by our vaccines, we're not responsible. That concerns me. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And before we go on, let's go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. I know that you're not practicing as such. You're doing research, but their website and, of course, what they'll learn on that website.
Well, the website is probably their best source of information because there are probably 100 or more publications and reports on the website that they can download. There's a lot of information that will sources of information that will lead them to other places where they can get additional information. So the website is www.immed.org. It's immediate.org, and it's the Institute for Molecular Medicine. And a simple Google or Yahoo search will turn up the Institute because it is quite a popular site for people with chronic illnesses. So that's a good place for information, a place that they can start, and they can find out more about these diseases and download publications and reports and so on, and find out where to get tested for these chronic infections that underlie many of the conditions that we've been discussing, treatment considerations, everything from the standard treatments, for example, with antibiotics, to non-standard treatments, more homeopathic-type treatments and so on. Other things such as diet, appropriate diet is very important for anyone with the chronic illness, and so we cover that on our website. Everything from Morgellons disease, which is this new fiber disease that's evolving, to the ones that we've talked about tonight, they'll find information on our website about these things. So, again, it's www.immed.org. And, of course, they can send me an email. I prefer that to a telephone call because I just get overwhelmed with telephone calls. and it gives me time to ponder the situation of the individual patients that contact me, and I can give probably a better response by email than I can by talking to them, believe it or not. In that is information to lead them to other websites and other information, as I mentioned, which is very useful for them. And we cover military issues on that website as well as civilian issues, mostly that have to do with these infections that we've been discussing this evening. But there's some other information on cancer and other conditions as well. Turns out even these infections play a role in cancer. They cause progression, very rapid progression of cancers. And at the last, the time before the last, American Academy of Environmental Medicine, I presented a paper on breast cancer where these infections we found in the patients that progressed and died very quickly. Most of them had these infections that we're talking about, and the ones that survived did not have the infection. So we know that they also play a role in cancer by stimulating the rapid progression and the death of patients with cancer. So that's another whole area that's very important as well.
Well, could you discuss a little bit about this Morgellons disease? Because this is the craziest thing I've ever heard of, this fiber disease. What is this? Do we have any idea what its origin is? And certainly, what are these fibers that are coming out through the skin and causing the intense itching?
Well, you know, there a lot of people claim that this Morgellons disease is just a figment of people's imagination, that they invent this and they invent the fibers coming out of their skin and so on, that they're just fibers that have been picked up by wearing clothing and so on. But these patients do have a real problem. They do have fibers, multicolored fibers, that are actually being emitted out of their skin. They're being extruded out of their skin. They're not being picked up, not inadvertently. And associated with these patients are worm-like structures in the skin. So it's not just the fibers. The fibers are probably being produced by these worm-like organisms in the skin, which can be found and identified and removed from the skin. We don't know a lot about them. We don't know exactly what species they are. They have multiple elements, which makes it very confusing. They have some elements of insects, some of worms, and some of elements of bacteria, but I think that the elements of bacteria are the fact that in their gut, the bacteria that we've been discussing tends to be present. So these are little killing machines that really cause people tremendous problems. And this is a new emerging area. We just really don't know very much. There's probably less than a half a dozen researchers and physicians in this country that have done any work on Morgellons disease and know anything about it. And so this is something that is brand new to us as well. And the only reason we got involved in it is that the patients were contacting me with this problem, and we didn't know much about it. And so we started taking a look at this to see if there's anything we could do to help these patients. And so we've actually assembled a number of different things that can help patients and put them on our website. And we're just in the process of revising that. I've been working with other physicians, patients, and so on, to try and come up with some things that will actually help people and help prevent the spread of it to immediate family members and even pets that can pick this up. So this is a problem as well, and we're not quite sure where this all came from.
Well, could this be another biowarfare agent? Could it be,
It certainly could. It certainly could, and I get very suspicious when I see these things, that particularly they have different genetic elements, because this is the one thing that we found with the biowarfare infections that were developed for biological warfare. They tend to be hybrid elements. They tend to be elements of different types of microbes put together to make a superbug, for example. And these are all done in the process of what's called weaponization, to make an infection more difficult to find, to make it more pathogenic, to make it more survivable, to give it certain characteristics so that it can hide in certain places or attack certain tissues. There are a number of different things that are involved in this, but I get very suspicious when I see these very complicated multiple infectious agents that have all these different elements in them. You know, it's a very complicated picture, and that makes me very suspicious.
Well, is this seen all over the world? Is it seen primarily in the United States? Do we really know?
We don't know at this point. Has it been seen in other places? Yes. What is the extent? We just don't know. There have been no epidemiological studies, to my knowledge, on it. We do know that in certain places it's more prominent in, for example, Florida, Texas, and California, and we don't know the reason for that as well. And I guess it will just take time to sort this out. I mean, it's, and hopefully we'll be able to sort it out fast enough so that it won't spread like Lyme disease. We could have probably nipped Lyme disease in the bud if we jumped on it early on, but because of all the confusion and the lack of really treatment programs that were effective, it tended to get loose and spread even more. And the situation, we could be facing the same situation with Morgellons disease.
Well, you know, the thing that really disturbs me is we hear all about the genetically modified crops, and I know that's out of your field of expertise, but, you know, then we find out that these fields of genetically modified crops, which the manufacturers swear will not be spread to other areas, they'll only be circumscribed, and then they've contaminated the entire rice crop, or almost the entire rice crop in here in California with this abnormal transgenic or rice. I don't know what they've done to it. And then we find the bees are disappearing, and they have bacteria in them that in the gut, in the bees' gut that come from these genetically modified crops. And what are we doing to humanity when we have scientists who are out there studying about all these abnormal diseases? They can actually create new and terrible diseases. There's this Dr. May Wu or something about over in England who's written a book on this and frightened to death about what scientists are doing.
Well, it's one of the problems that we face because we've set up all these laboratories that are doing experiments, genetic experiments, and creating biological warfare agents and so on. And, of course, once these things are created, then somebody gets the bright idea that they need to be tested. And this is the whole process that we found ourselves in Texas. And, of course, that's the book Project Daylily that you carry that discusses this, or stumbling on the prison testing program down there, which caused innumerable deaths and illnesses in the prison system, and then spread out into the communities and so on, and it's still spreading. And that's just one example. It's probably just the very small tip of the iceberg about what has happened over the last few decades here in the United States. And it's not just the United States. This is a worldwide problem.
And it really is so frightening. And the trouble is the average doctor, the average doctor means well. He really does. He wants to help. But he has no idea about these things. And have you been able to get your book fairly widely distributed among physicians, do you know?
Well, I don't think it's widely distributed. Again, it's people like yourself in certain radio programs that I go on that I could discuss the book. I don't really have the resources to advertise it. It's a self-published book. So because of that, we don't have a big publishing company that will back us up. And the reason for that is I didn't want them to change the book. And in negotiating with some of the big publishers and everything, yeah, they would publish the book, but then they'd want to make their own changes in it, and I didn't like that. And because there's just too much pressure to water things down to the point where it's meaningless. And the book is pretty hard-hitting, and it's all true, but we've changed the names and changed the institution's names and so on. People can probably figure out what we're talking about very easily. But we just did that because we didn't want entanglements. And one of the ways that you stop publications, of course, is by filing multiple lawsuits against somebody claiming defamation, even though there is none. But you can be drained fighting all these lawsuits. And that's the one thing we didn't want to do, was to have frivolous lawsuits filed against us because of a book. So we've just turned it into, based on a true story, where we just changed the names of the individuals, the characters, and let it go. Everything else in it is true, and the science is certainly true in it, and backed up by our publications, by our congressional testimony, by the reports and the work of other scientists and physicians around the world. So, but it's been an interesting few years, that's for sure.
I'm glad you've hung in there. I'm sure a lot of people would have really been intimidated. And I've known so many people who've gotten into this, and then once they've realized the enormity of what we're up against, and really, of course, here we are, just little tiny little beings against these tremendous forces of wealth and power and organized evil, they just sort of give up, and it's easier to go off and hide in the corner. But you can't do that if you're a moral individual. If you know what's going on, you have an obligation to simply do everything we can to educate people, and hopefully that the information you put out and that I put out will have an impact, at least on those people who are supposed to hear. So I feel privileged to do what I do, and I really appreciate your willingness to come on and share your experiences with our audience.
Well, again, it's my pleasure to help people that have this problem, because I know, as you know, we kind of got involved in this when our stepdaughter came back in the first Gulf War and had one of these infections, and we found that so many different people had these problems, and I essentially changed my research directions, which up until then had been working on various types of cancer like breast cancer, and started slowly shifting into more of these chronic infections, because I realized not only were they important in a variety of modern diseases and evolving diseases in particular, but nobody was really seemed to be doing this and carrying the ball on this. And so we got heavily involved in it and trying to help patients with their particular problems. And that has been quite a load to carry, that's for sure.
Now, you mentioned, of course, that women with breast carcinoma and these chronic infections died much earlier. Would long-term antibiotics help these unfortunate women, fight their breast cancer?
Well, it turns out that's true, although control studies haven't been done to actually prove that. There's some anecdotal evidence that is true, that certainly people that have these infections, if they go on long-term antibiotics, no matter what disease they've been diagnosed with, do better. So in the case of cancer, for example, women with ovarian and breast cancer, there's a fairly high incidence of these infections, at least in certain areas. And because of that, the women tend to progress and die more quickly. And I feel that can be prevented by treating these infections. And the tie-in here turns out to the Army has actually done some research on this, showing that these infections, if they get in the culture of cells, of normal cells, will help them progress to cancer cells. And if they're cancer cells, it will help them progress to more malignancy. And this is what I've been working on, the metastasis or the spread of the cancer cells. And it turns out these types of infections will promote that, because they'll promote the genetic change within the cancer and promote them to more and more malignant forms. And so this is something that I think is very important. But again, it's a difficult area to work in. I found that there was a lot of resistance in this to these kinds of concepts and so on. But I think the research will hold up over time.
And, of course, the whole idea then would be to control the chronic infection, which is actually encouraging the growth of the cancer then. What do you ordinarily use? Do you have to really try to identify which organism it is before you decide whether to use a doxycycline or one of the other antibiotics?
Well, that's certainly helpful. You can use a general antibiotic if you have some idea that infection is sensitive to it, but in these complex multiple infection conditions like Lyme disease, you really need to get an idea of what types of co-infections are there, because it does change significantly the treatment strategy. And people on our website will notice that if they look at the articles on Lyme disease, for example, under treatment in our website, they'll notice that depending upon the co-infections, there's a different strategy that's suggested to treat these multiple co-infections. And that's done basically because not all these infectious agents have the same susceptibilities to antibiotics. And so you use different combinations of antibiotics to get a more effective suppression of the overall infection, which is, again, multiple agents have to be suppressed in parallel instead of just suppressing one and then coming back with another agent suppressing another. Turns out you've got to be more aggressive than that. So there's some advice in there on what can be done, and there are very few physicians, unfortunately, that they're willing to take that advice. So most are still back in the Stone Age when it comes to these complicated problems like Lyme disease.
Well, you mentioned, of course, that your father had a valvular disease related to chlamydia. Were you able to identify the organism before?
Yes.
Because
of our situation, we found that he had a mycoplasma pneumonia infection that caused endocarditis and attacked his valve.
Okay, fine. So that basically was the mycoplasma that he had then.
Yes. That was his problem, and once we solved the problem, he's lived another 15 years and is now 95, and I just took him to his cardiologist today. He's got a real good bill of health.
Okay, fine. Well, Chris, I think this is so vitally important, and this is really, I think, right on the very of the razor's edge of what medicine should be doing. And yet, of course, there are people who say, look, we can't afford to have everybody living to be 95, 100. Why, this will bankrupt our health care delivery system. But, of course, what's important, human life or a system you never should have set up to begin with? Well, Dr. Nicholson, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program here.
Okay, well, I'd be glad to go back and tell people about the book Project Daylily for
right
the last
ahead.
Couple of minutes, because I think they can get this at your bookstore, and this will give them a lot of insight into the role of these evolving new illnesses and infections in particular in a variety of chronic diseases and so on. And they could read about that, how we discovered these illnesses, these infections in chronic conditions like Gulf War illness and in the prison system and so on, how they were being tested, how they got loose and our society, and how they're causing havoc in a variety of different medical conditions now. And also our website, the Institute for Molecular Medicine, www.immed.org. There people can find information about chronic diseases and how they're identified, how they're diagnosed and treated. And so those are the two elements that I'd like to leave your viewers with. And we'll try to help them if they have medical problems to the limit that we can. We're a very small staff, so I usually end up having to bear the brunt of this. I hope to hire a few people so that we can help more individuals who need help. But we do what we can to try and help. But again, Project Daylily, I think your listeners would enjoy that book.
Well, I know I've certainly enjoyed it. It reads like a Tom Clancy thriller. The only trouble is it's true. And we'll tell our listeners a little later how, if they're interested in knowing more about the book, Project Daylily is going to open up all sorts of understanding to you about these diseases. And, of course, there's been a very conscious effort to suppress the information from the American people. And so it's vitally important that if you're out there in the listening audience that you understand what we're up against. You understand there are people who have a different worldview. There are people who really are not compassionate and not kind, and certainly the average doctor, is doing the very, very best he can, but he has no idea what's really going on. He doesn't listen to our programs. He hasn't heard Dr. Nicholson. He hasn't gone to his website and realized that there's a whole a myriad of diseases out there that are plaguing millions of Americans today that most physicians have no idea even exists. Well, Dr. Nicholson, thank you so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure, and we look forward to having you on again sometime real soon.
Well, again, thanks for having me on your program.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, that was Dr. DeGard Nicholson, certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope your favorite guest as well. And of course, we have a number of interviews with him in the past. Hope to have a number in the future. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course our Dr. Nicholson's book, Project Daylily, if you'd like to know more about it. Our telephone number, www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And the book is actually written as faction, which is based upon fact. And I know many of the people he talks to, because I've interviewed them. And I can assure you that the book is accurate. We have a 4-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a 4-tape set on chronic fatigue. We have a 4-tape set on Lyme disease, and you won't find these elsewhere. We have 2 4-tape sets on autism. and they are killing off our young people, destroying their minds. They know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, there are effective treatments for autism, actively being discouraged by the wicked people who are controlling the medical establishment. It is not the physician's fault, but it is the fault of the people who knowingly are concealing the truth, both from physicians and parents. So, again, if you'd like more information on autism, chronic fatigue, Lyme disease, and, of course, I'd like to know about the Gulf War syndrome, I'd like to know about depleted uranium, if you have not yet seen the DVD, Beyond Treason. It actually has with it a CD-ROM that actually has thousands of pages of government documents telling you how they're poisoning our boys over there with depleted uranium. They know exactly what they're doing, but the military officers who want to keep their jobs must keep their mouths shut. And, of course, if you do come up forward and try to tell the truth, they will come after you and destroy you and your family if they can. And, of course, the story of Dr. Garth Nicholson, who you just heard, and how so many of the people that he was in contact with were killed there at Houston, Texas, that he had to give his tenured position at the MD Anderson Clinic and move to California to preserve his life and his wife's life. And when you read the book, you realize there are multiple efforts to kill both he and his wife. Fascinating. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. The book, Dr. Nicholson's book, Project Daylily. And, of course, we hope maybe you'll want to get my book as well, if you'd like more information. Of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Our latest talk on Forbidden Secret. Our latest four-tape set on The Secret Behind the Secret. Really fascinating material. And, of course, this is all ties into these same dark spiritual forces that hate humanity. And then, of course, a great new DVD, Constance Cumby, The Emergence DVD and or a VHS. Chris Pinto, called The Atlantis Connection. Right now it's available on DVD, but it will be available in, pardon me, it's available on VHS, but it will be available in DVD. And then, of course, Chris's wonderful The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, the Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and, of course, then, if you have not yet seen, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the story of the demonic involvement within the musical profession, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, important information. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Stan telling you that I hope you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and there you can read our newsletters if you're interested in getting the newsletter regularly or joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters or getting some of our other material. Why, we'd be glad to get it to you. We hope, of course, you'll listen to our programs on Radio Liberty. You can listen to them 3 hours a day at www.radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our programs, that you'll pull down our newsletters and copy them, especially the February 2007, which explains why we're going to go to war with Iran. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.